Toki, the question, if you don't mind, that I would like to begin with is how did the magic in the middle catch you? How did it first catch you?
I was sleepwalking.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 7 years old, maybe. I live in a little house with my parents and my older sister. And somehow I woke up and went out to the bathroom and stood with my back against the heater in this old house. And my mother finds me there. And she says, "What are you doing here?" And I realized that I've walked out there without being conscious of it. And I look at her and I say, "Mom, I feel something really, really small and something really huge. And they're connected. And it feels very good." I remember my mom giving me a kiss and he said, "Wonderful. Should you go back to bed?" "Yes, mom." And I went back to bed. That's my first recognition of the fractalness of the nature of life itself, with not just the yin and not just the yang, but that there's an experience that they call the Tao. And then from then on, I had forgotten this many years ago, for many years, and then suddenly this memory surfaces.
Wow.
Now, practicing jiu-jitsu a little bit later on, I began to realize that I was, when we were practicing on the dojo, I entered this energetic field where I didn't have to think. It was like a flow and moving with flow and learning, the self-defense of jiu-jitsu. I got a hint that there was something going on that was not just thinking, opinions, and dogma. Now, that became
Nor,
a path for me.
I was going to say, nor would I imagine it wasn't some mechanical moving either in,
Absolutely not.
yeah.
I began to realize that there was, you could think about something, or you could hear about something, or you could experience something, and that there's such a difference between the two. And so I became quite early on committed to experiencing the profundity of life rather than having a belief. I left the Danish state church by choice when I was 16. And so many experiences, and I don't want to fill the evening with it, but I began to realize that there was something I could experience that gave me strength and was intriguing. It was like attracting me. And then this friend of mine, to my 16th birthday, gave me the Tao Te Ching. And I began to read this wisdom as if this was like the best I'd ever written, read. And they speak about this, that the Tao that can be spoken is not the real Tao. And so, going further into my more adult life and professional life, I became committed to want to find and establish myself in that flow and then take it to work. And that is a longer story I won't tell tonight, but certainly it has been a love affair with, you could call it the magic in the middle or the Tao, or you can call it nothing, but that there's something vibrating. In, you know, it's, we meet each other on the outside, but can we meet ourselves on the inside? And can we then begin to meet each other from the inside out? Became intriguing question for me to explore. And then that brought it with me into organizing meetings, and then the art of the hospitality of the human heart began to open for me. And then we ended up calling it the art of hosting conversations at spaces that matter, where learning together in the here and now becomes a reality.
And there is something inherently meaningful about this meeting inside to inside. There is something inherently meaningful to this exploration of life as it's happening. Wouldn't you say?
It's essential. But it's so strange that we are born in societies that has very little respect for the here and now. And it's put into a box and said, this is spirituality, or this is for a certain group of people. But if you really remember back to when we were children, and when we have really experienced profound relationship to ourselves, to life and each other, in my case, at least, I've always found it in the here and in the now. And to me, you know, using the word the magic in the middle, to me, is when we allow ourselves surrender into the moment together, something rises that cannot be described, but it is spacious, it has its own gentle power, and it wants to do good. It wants to grow life. And why not? So this is the questions I'm having. Why not? You know, the question was bugging me for 10 years. It went something like this. What if hosting, inviting and hosting conversations and spaces that matter is the kind of leadership that allows us to learn together as a community? Placing more importance on learning than just passing on information to each other. And learning arises in the here and now. As you were saying, it just unfolds in when that via logos dialogue begins to flow between us. And that's not just words, but it's the feeling of sharing in the same awareness that is at our center.
Yeah, that's something to slow down on, I think. Sharing the same awareness that's in our, that is our center. Because I think in the work that we do with interbeing, one of the things that is so essential is the beginning to recognize that this is not simply my experience. That's essential, to recognize that there is an experience, but that actually there is something that we're sharing. And that kind of pushes at the boundaries of our kind of the way that we perceive the individual. It makes the individual, as one of our practitioners said, it's like I've discovered that I'm so much bigger than I thought I was, than I ever knew that I was. But it doesn't take away your uniqueness, your capacity for choice, who you are as an individual, but it places it in a very different field of life. And I find that to be quite extraordinary.
I'm just trying to feel what words could express that spaciousness seems to flow. It seems to flow. And that flow, is deeply connected to we are all breathing. And when we don't breathe anymore, we are dead. So there's some subtlety in the art of noticing and being flowing with your own breath that helps that space. It opens and then it flows in a certain, not preconceived direction, but it flows in all directions at the same time. And I have a deep, what is it, inspiration to explore how that flow would begin to be influential in us appreciating, honoring life. And finding solutions that are imbued with this inspiration of this flow that doesn't belong to it. It will keep on flowing. Whoever is partaking in that liveliness of the breath more consciously, we can learn how to flow together more kindly. And more effectively, and that instead of serving individual purposes, we can begin to serve those basic purposes that life holds: beauty, co-creation. Caring. These are not qualities we are inventing, they are a part of our essence. And it has been so interesting, you were saying, where this has gone. This has been invited, and I think there's a huge longing in the world, not just with the 10, 12, 15 of us or little groups, but there's a huge longing in the world to begin to be together authentically and serve life rather than egotistic ideas or even some of the stupidity that's going on in the world now, as human beings are creating so much suffering for other humans and for the rest of the planet. So that edge, Elizabeth, has really been, yes, individual experience, yes, group experience, but how may it serve where it really matters? And this has been my exploration and still is. But I feel that connectivity between these things, it's not a separate thing, but there's a price to it. I have to give up my opinions about myself and you, and my expectations in the is in the way. Can I be with what is in this moment and unfold with it from there? And I think this is an invitation that is individually to each of us. And when we practice it, then it rises up and we become more than the sum of the parts.
I appreciate what you're saying, Toki, because this choice that is at that we're each confronted with in this in a group setting in order for the magic to come through us or come into the middle. I mean, it's always there, but to bring it alive, to bring it into human awareness, to bring it to be moved by something beyond oneself that one is deeply, deeply connected to, but is also at the same time beyond ourselves and holding us in some profound way, that to do that is a choice. And it's a choice, as you say, to give up my opinions, but also, or and also, to lean. It's like the self becomes a door instead of a tower, becomes an opening, and to lean kind of beyond oneself in a, and to be really profoundly, openly curious. And curious in a way that allows for things that we don't already know. That creates a space of aliveness, or it allows us to enter into or be of life. And life has an agenda to live, but that is a choice that means I give up my kind of anchor in separation, which is something that we've all been taught and conditioned to believe in our different cultures.
Now, as you were talking, what happens when curiosity turns to listening between the notes? I don't know you guys if you listen to Keith Jarrett.
The Cologne concert.
The Cologne concert is a beautiful example of becoming a vehicle for life to flow through. I read an interview with him once, and people said, "How can you do this improvisation?" He says, "I'm not doing it. You know, my task is to train, to practice, to be able to move my fingers and sort of play the piano, and then be empty and be in the now. And then it just flows through me." And isn't it a thing to, you know, which is also why I said yes to participate in this and your, you know, kind invitation for that first interview you made, that I think we need to grow this in a natural way, but to not just have it as a high experience, but that can become, it is our nature, but it's not our second nature yet, because we get fooled. You know, we think, no, this is just for a certain kind of people. But I think this longing in the world now for that calm flow to not be blocked, and to begin to be of service, and that meeting with each other becomes a celebration of life, and gives us strength to tackle the despair, the hate. You know, you can fight hate, or you can find love in your heart and something. You can fight greed, or you can be generous. What is the medicine that doesn't have another side?
Mm-hmm.
What is that water that keeps flowing? What is the strength of the breath besides just moving our lungs. And to me, I found in so many ways, both my Aikido practice, my meditation practice, and my hosting practice, that they bring me into that flow where I don't care to be an individual. I care to be life and share that with whoever is there. And I would not have been able to go to some of the places I've done work, Israel, Palestine, right by the wall, after, you know, places in post-Civil War in Flotiwa and other places, where it's certainly dark, but somehow that flow carried me. And I was invited from somebody, from that flow, from that heart, from that essence. And I think if there's one thing I hope for the human species, is may we amplify this. May we begin to live for real and not live this pseudo mind game that creates so much shadow that it takes strength to just even witness it.
Yeah, and it so easily wears us down. There's several things in what you just said, and probably more that I would like to highlight, that bringing this, because I think many of us, and probably all of us from at one time or another, have experienced creative flow in even writing a report. You can get into flow. But to flow together, to basically be in this unknown movement that takes up what we each have to bring and create something different, something not different, but something new out of it that no one expected. That's a new level of this kind of flow state together. And I think that's the edge that we're pushing, the what you said before about co-creation, but we're co-creating with each other, but also with something that's beyond us. And that actually, if we slow down and really contemplate what that suggests about who we are, I find that quite thrilling and literally awesome. It's humbling in the best possible way.
There's an interesting discernment that I hadn't really thought so clearly about before that you were speaking to. Can you know this flow? Can you feel this flow? What is the flow that can be felt? If we're talking about not a flow that just everything goes my way kind of flow, I get all my desires, then that's it, you know. But that you're flowing, you are, the life force is flowing you. I have had periods of my life where I wanted to know that. And then it disappeared. I fell out of it. I'm more and more trying to practice to just feel it and feel myself back. Because what we can know is that it feels like home. It feels like we can see each other. and we can see ourselves in each other. And then that humanity begins to rise. The trust that life in each of us is as sacred as it is in our own selves and in all other beings that are moving. And why couldn't this not become an education, not linear? Now, how do we awaken the fractality of learning to become an education of becoming more conscious and awake, rather than being intelligently unconscious and end up not acting wisely and creating more wars and more violence and so forth? These are questions that are stirring in me, and I can hear them many places.
I think this relates to something you said earlier about not simply seeking this for the experience, not simply wanting that home feeling. I mean, I think that's one of the interesting paradoxes, as you said, that the wanting it, wanting to have it is sort of the guarantee that you won't.
Yes.
And
it eludes you.
Yeah,
it eludes us.
But it's that, I mean, it's fascinating, isn't it? It's that you could call it a consumer mentality, which is so fundamental to Western culture or capitalist culture. And that, but also the change comes, that the transformation comes from the recognition that we're tapping into, or we're opening up to, an intelligence. Someone spoke early, I mean, we've been talking about aliveness, the movement of life itself. Someone spoke about wisdom coming through. It's that it's not an experience, simply an experience that I'm having that is positive. And often after an initial experience, we're so trained to be experience or sense a certain kind of sensation seeking, that it's often we misremember what this is as something that is personal. And I'm not saying that it's not personal. It happens to you, and it's your something is opening up for me, for you, for each of us. But that what that is something that is far bigger than any of us or the group as a whole. And to not hold that as a belief, but to live that from one's own recognition and own inquiry into what is this? What is this? Not in a mental way, but experientially.
Right. Now let's bring then another aspect in. Practice.
Yeah.
Because what are the practices that we individually can choose to practice and we collectively can choose to practice? Now, in your introduction today, sitting on Zoom, you invited us to sit in circle, and we could have been sitting in my forest where I live, where I have little circle meetings every month. We practice peace for a full day sitting around a fire, and then we do Aikido and flow game and and bow and arrow, but all of it focused on awakening ourselves to be awake. And so one way I have found not to be caught in the desire for the experience, but let the longing for the experience just be, and then practice something that awakes me in the here and now. Well, and then the experience is already there.
Well, that what you just said, you made a distinction between the desire for the experience and the longing for the experience.
Yes.
And that
the longing is real, because I think we're actually born with it.
Yeah.
At least it feels to me, you know, whatever made me sleepwalk that night, and whatever, you know, I was feeling in my little children's heart felt as if it was like origin. Mm-hmm. And this origin sense of feeling, the origin feeling of life, can be opened up by whatever practices that allows me to be awake.
Mm-hmm.
Building on the wisdom
mm-hmm.
that it's already there. The magic, we are not creating it. If we are creating it, it becomes from here. But we are entering it, or it tickles us, and then suddenly we surrender into it. So there's something about this practice. Which is why we call it hosting, not facilitation. Facilitation is a beautiful thing, and it can be effective in many cases. Hosting has a little bit more of that feeling of we are hosting the practices that allows us to enter into that collective spaciousness and be a little bit more in tune and respectful of life's presence and its flow towards whatever it wants to emerge naturally, and not the manipulation of the human mind games, which
I just want to slow down on this longing, because this longing, I mean, you said something before about the flow that doesn't, that you can't feel the flow that, but I mean,
no, I said you can't feel the flow, you can't understand it intellectually.
No.
If you try, you will splinter it.
Yeah, but that.
But it can be felt, because we have that ability, and awareness captures that. You know, what's it called? The radical interconnectedness of all things.
Yeah. I guess what I'm trying to touch is how this longing is in some ways kind of ahead of us. That it's actually quite mysterious, because it is it itself. It is the opening itself. And in that, and there's often a transition of a kind of deep ache that is an opening to, in some ways, the existential dimension of life. That it's not a, it's something that works beyond the mind. It's a pull. It's a pull. It's a pull that is saying, that is simultaneously longing for connection, or that connectivity that you were just speaking about, and yet it is that connectivity at the same time.
So are you saying I'm longing for it, or we can long for it, but it also longs for me?
Yes, yes.
It all longs for us.
Yes, yes, yes. And that's, there's something about that that is so, actually, I so thrilling, so confirming of life itself. That as I long for, I'll use the word wholeness, that I long for something that I am part of. I long to be alive, awake to that, which you call the interrelatedness of all things. And it's a pull towards that, and it is the recognition of that at the same time. Because it is longing, it wants us there. It wants us awake to if you can say that, and that it is also ourselves in the deepest sense.
Are we approaching then, what are the purposes that we don't invent, but that life has already invented?
Yeah.
Which is, but it's so tricky, because then, you know, the interpretations of what the truth is and what the truth is not, and all of this. But there's something about that, what did I say to my mom? There's something really small, and there's something really big, and it's connected.
Yeah.
And it feels, whatever, wonderful, or it feels good. So that sense of wholeness, oneness, love, that is not desire, but that is. Now we are getting dangerously close to talking too much about it, Elizabeth. Because you put too many words to this. And I remember now when we were talking last year, half a year ago, whenever that was, because too many interpretations, too many. So how to keep it, just the stance of, you know, and I'm leaning towards, this is now, I'm 77, I don't know how many more years I have, but it's not that many. But I just want to feel that love affair with life. You know, practice can become a love affair.
Yeah.
I was watching when Marion, when you came on the screen tonight, you are outside, and I saw the wind in your hair. And it just made me joyful. The wind was there, not static. And these little moments where feeling takes over, and you don't actually know what's happening. You don't actually have an opinion about it, because it would be degrading it. But that awesome normality of witnessing yourself in life and witnessing the others in life. And there it, you know, the brain stops. It can't follow. It can't follow. And beauty arises. And maybe if it, you know, if it should be expressed in anything, poetry is maybe the language of it, or painting, or just being kind in life, even your day to day.